providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed that conversation I just had with Chris Temple. And on the back of that whole discussion on maybe the financial system being under a lot of pressure and currencies, especially how they are all functioning to each other, I think this next topic that I'm chatting with Mark Chandler about is crucial. Now, Mark is the managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, it's a relatively new development, but an article that came out of the Washington Post just a couple days ago stated from Trump that he knows the virus came out of a Chinese lab. Now, there's a lot of other and conflicting stories to this. That's not really the crucial part here. The more crucial part is tensions building between the U.S. and China. It was really what dominated headlines last year was this trade war, and then at the end of the year, some optimism that a trade war or trade deal was getting done. We saw a phase one trade deal, but now this renewed tension on a completely different front between the U.S. and China, this could be just another, well, almost the explosion waiting to happen. Give us a little recap on what you think could come out of this new conflict here.
Yeah, sure. So what happened is in the Washington Post, they reported that the White House is thinking about ways to retaliate against China for this coronavirus. Now, all along, President Trump has been trying to blame China. In fact, there wasn't the G7 failed to have a communique, issue a communique after a recent meeting because the U.S. was insisting on calling it a flu, somehow whether it's a Wuhan flu or the Chinese flu. They were really trying to single this out. And it's controversial, I'd say at the least, but the important thing is that the U.S., Trump had said, separate from the article in the Washington Post, is when the president said that he knows, he's got evidence to suggest that the virus actually came out of a lab, which is part of this conspiratorial story all over the internet. And so the important thing for investors is the U.S. is thinking about retaliation. Now, many other countries in Europe have been talking about, and Australia too, talking about an investigation. And it is disappointing that China is rebuffing and not participating with the World Health Organization inquiry into the origins, because understanding the origins could help get us a vaccine. But the U.S. already has decided that China's at fault, and they're thinking about retaliation. And so the retaliation could be some things like, for example, U.S. pension fund, government pension funds have a choice of different equities to invest in. Like many people are familiar with these sort of Chinese menus of which how you should have your 401k money invested if your company gives you the 401k. And the government pension funds allow, they give the participants an offering that includes emerging market stocks, which includes China. So the U.S., the government, the federal government could say, no longer will we give our employees access to this kind of fund. I think it has minimal impact on the big flows, capital flows around the world, but it's a possibility. Second thing is that China, as being a sovereign, it's difficult to sue them in a court of law, it's like a U.S. court. The U.S. has talked about suspending that, denying China that immunity from being a sovereign. And that's sort of a sword that cuts two ways, because the U.S. also benefits from being a sovereign and not having been caught up in all these court cases all around the world. But there is a possibility that was discussed in the Washington Post article. But the third thing, and this is what is catching people's attention, I think, is that it is a suggestion that maybe the U.S. would default on some of the debt that China owns of the U.S. That is to say, the U.S., China owns at least $1 trillion worth of U.S. treasuries. From the U.S., this is a U.S. Estimate from the U.S. Treasury Department. And so the idea would be that if we can't get China to pay us, to compensate us for the economic hit from the COVID crisis, for the lives lost, maybe we can just not pay them what we owe them. This is an incredibly controversial issue, as you can imagine. It raises all kinds of questions. Quickly, though, the president's advisor, a top economic advisor, Kudlow, denied it. But in some ways, the mere fact that it was discussed, or that enough people think it was discussed, already is having a market impact. For example, even though, you know, China today, May 1st, is closed for the May Day holiday, it'll be closed the next couple of days. But the markets, as you know, have invented a parallel currency, an offshore RMB. And that offshore RMB sold off, not by a lot, but about 0.75% today on May 1st. And like I say, it's not a lot, but it's a lot for China. It's probably the biggest down move that China's currency's had since the middle of March. And so some people think that this is the Chinese signaling their displeasure with the U.S. conversation. I'm not so convinced. Emerging markets are down. If I was at a hedge fund and I saw this headline come across, it was a Washington Post story, I know China's going to be closed for a while. I think that's like an interesting event type trade. Headline comes across, hey, this is not good for the RMB. Either China purposely lets it fall, or as a consequence that the RMB falls. And so I'm not so sure that one needs to assume that the central bank, the Chinese officials are behind it. But it's clearly the direction that the market took the RMB in. And again, this is the offshore RMB.
Okay, but this is a very interesting story, just in, as you said, the fact that it is being mentioned. But do you see, no matter how these currencies move, if the country does go through with something like this, do you see it impacting at all the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency?
Oh, yeah, I think this would be, I mean, this is sort of the mechanics of it. You know, China has a debt of ours, so it's got a particular treasury bond that it owns. How is it possible to just default against China, even if we wanted to? You know, there's several tens of billions of dollars of a particular issue that China's bought. Can we just default against on who owns it, or do we have to default on the issue itself? And so I think that, you know, it really reminds me of how the whole euro dollar market, the offshore U.S. dollar market, began. In the late 50s, there was a Suez crisis. And that is, make a long story short, Russians had deposits at U.S. banks, didn't like the way we treated our allies, Britain and France. And so what they did was they took their dollars because they were afraid of being frozen in the U.S. And so the Russians took their dollars from deposit in the U.S., U.S. banks, to British merchant banks. And now these British merchant banks had dollars they could lend. They were not capped. The interest rate wasn't capped by U.S. domestic rules. The beginnings of the offshore dollar market is the Russians, not capitalist development, it's a communist development to avoid the possible punishments the U.S. can inflict on them. And so if you were to tell me that the U.S. would go forward with this strategy of defaulting, and somehow figuring out how to default just on China, not everybody else would get scared. That this is like a Pandora box. When you open it, I think that even if you question it, I think that the credibility of the U.S., the reputational risk of the U.S. is very great. I think it gives people even greater encouragement to look for an alternative.
Do you see an alternative out there then?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's really not. But what countries could do, because it's not necessarily an all or nothing kind of proposition. So, for example, foreign central banks had, and this is from the IMF's data, COFER, which is COFER. You could Google that and find that the IMF keeps track of the composition of most of the central banks' reserves. And the central banks as a whole, as a universe, have about 62 to say 65% of their currencies and their reserves in dollar instruments. Over time, because there's not such a clear alternative, over time, central banks can just reduce that 50% and share that other 50% with euro, sterling, which now that's going to leave the EU, the currency might become more decoupled from the euro. So you might see an increase in other currencies. That's the idea. We can go from what's the alternative? And the alternative is going from a largely unipolar world in reserves, where the U.S. dollar dominates, to a multipolar world.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's something we've talked about where there is the potential of just other currencies starting to have a bit more, I guess, weight in the world. It's a tough and very difficult discussion because, well, we just don't know how it could all play out. But when it comes to the funding of the U.S., then I think the argument has been that China has been more or less stepping back from some of their purchases of government treasuries in the U.S. So let's say that the U.S. does continue to threaten not paying this debt. Does it impact the U.S.'s ability to be able to continue to fund the treasuries?
I think that's an interesting thing because, you know, the day that the May 1st, when the offshore yuan gets hit, you say, well, what would be the effect on U.S. treasuries? Well, we've had a stock market that's hit now for the second day in a row, and that's putting a bid underneath the treasuries, pushing yields down a little bit. So I'd say there's no effect in the treasury market from this, say, from playing with matches. But for the Chinese, though, I mean, sort of like in for a pound, or in for a penny, in for a pound, it is true that back in 2014, they had almost $1.3 trillion in treasuries. And that's about the peak, was around $1.3 trillion. And now they have about almost $1.1 trillion. So it seems to me that they're not accumulating more dollars, but they're sort of maintaining more or less what they have.
So then what does that mean for the U.S. if China isn't a net buyer?
Well, in the short run, I don't think it really means anything because we have another big buyer called the Federal Reserve. And, you know, there's a lot of people who think that the Federal Reserve is the reason why yields are low in the U.S., and I wonder if the Federal Reserve were to step away and say, you know, libertarians out there are right. We've encroached on the markets too much. Let's pull back from all of our functions. Interest rates, I think, would be much lower. Like we saw back in February, in the middle of March, when it looked like we were at the end of days, so to speak, the U.S. 10-year yield fell to 31 basis points. Today we're at around 60. So I think if the Federal Reserve were to really step away, we'd go back down and test those lows. Not that it's likely to happen, but there's all like a long way to explain, I think, that if China steps away, yields in the U.S. are so low already. It doesn't look like we're having any problems placing our treasury bonds, and we're raising a lot of them, of course, as you know, because of the large deficit. It doesn't seem like we have any problems, including that the Federal Reserve is right there buying. Though they've slowed down their buying, you know, at its peak, the Fed was buying $75 billion worth of treasuries a day. And now it's come down to $50 billion a week. So we've seen a real dramatic decline, but yields are still stable, sort of in this not much above 50 basis points.
So, Mark, in summary, then, it doesn't sound like you think that the Fed will or the U.S. will actually default on some of this debt that is owed to China because of the complexities of, well, who else holds it. How important do you think this story is in terms of moving forward in confidence in the U.S., but then also this U.S.-China battle that seems never ending?
Yes, I do think that, China, in many ways, I think China is still trying to project its influence and power in the world, and so is the United States. And I think there's like a natural tension. But at the same time, I think that the market is, I think not only investors, but other policymakers have given U.S. President Trump a wide berth. He's going to talk about the dollar and talk about trade in a way that if other foreign leaders did, it really like caused an uproar. So they're giving Trump, I think, a wide berth. I think that it really depends on what happens in the elections in the U.S. If they have to give him wide berth for another 4 years, I think it becomes more of a more like semi-permanent type of arrangement rather than just a one-off, off-the-cuff type comments.
Okay. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. Some interesting comments, and really this story just is so new. We don't know how it's going to play out, but Yeah, I think it does add a little some ammo to those people saying, well, this currency system that we are in and the amount of debt that is being carried, it can all be vanished. This thing can really start to snowball here if it does get out of hand. But again, this is just early on. Just wanted to share really that development from this week with everybody out there. Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Good luck, everybody.